Hey everyone, thanks for joining me today. This is the Faraway Farm Boy podcast and I'm your host, Dustin. Before I introduce my guest, I'd like to give a shout out to my sponsors. This podcast is made possible by Livestock Veterinary Services in Pitcher Butte, Alberta. Livestock Veterinary Services provides a wide range of services for livestock, including dairy herd management, cow-calf herd management, advanced reproduction services, medicine and surgery, and many more. If you're ready to see their expert veterinary team, call Livestock Vet Services today at 403-732-5322 or make an appointment at livestockvet.ca. This podcast is sponsored by Trow Nutrition. As leaders in animal nutrition, Trow Nutrition prides themselves in working with Canadian dairy farmers. Trow understands the importance of bringing innovative nutritional solutions to your operations to maximize herd efficiency. Call your nearest Trow Nutrition location today to learn more about our innovative calf nutrition program. This podcast is also sponsored by Chinook Dairy Service. Did you know that Chinook Dairy Service can fine-tune and optimize the performance of all brands of milking equipment? Call Chinook for a free milking system evaluation today. Today's guest is a dairy farmer from Chilliwack, BC. Please welcome the very talented Aaron Niels.
Thanks for the coffee.
Yeah.
So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah. Tell our listeners a bit about your herd.
So we're milking right around 200 at the moment. About 75 of which are Jerseys. We like to run a more commercial style cow. We shoot for a shorter, more compact cow just for easier management, I think, and easier on their feet and legs and frame in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of goes for the Holsteins and the Jerseys, I would say.
So what's keeping you from going 100% Jerseys right away?
The first Jerseys we bought out of the States. Very nice cows. I guess what's stopping us right now, the dollar. It's tough to sell Holsteins and buy Jerseys kind of straight across without falling a bit behind. So especially, yeah, the dollar and the freight, and now with the border being a bit more complicated too, it's kind of playing a part of it too. So,
but are you breeding, are you keeping all your Holstein heifer calves type of thing, or are you just keeping your Jerseys? Or
so right now we're breeding probably 70% of our Holsteins beef and all the Jerseys sexed.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of beef going in the Jersey, just to tough breeders and the obvious bad ones kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, that's kind of the plan, is to transition.
And no hojos?
No hojos.
Oh, you're not into the crossbreeding?
I like to know what I have.
So. Yeah, that's always been my, the one thing about crossbreeding, right? The first generation, obviously, you get that hybrid vigor, but then it's like you don't really know what to expect after that type of thing.
Yeah, where do you go? Where do you go after that first crossing, I think, is the first. There's a lot of opinions out there, but...
Yeah. There's some... I seen some evidence that, Holstein, Monty, and something else, the offspring actually do okay after the third cross if you just keep going, if you have that cross
cycle.
Yeah,
okay.
It was unlike any other crossing that I've seen. Okay. Usually, you know, you have Holstein Jersey, that first one does okay, and then because you don't know what to expect from that offspring, then you can't really go farther than that as far as good looking cows that produce.
But yeah, you can get sires now that are first generation hojos that are I don't know if you call that purebred hojo or what, but
yeah.
So some guys are seeing good results with that, but
yeah.
This is the route we're taking at the moment.
Yeah, each their own.
Yeah.
I guess we should explain a little bit more about your farm. You're located right on the southern part of the Fraser Valley.
Yeah.
Right up against the mountains. So kind of a unique climate, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, up against the mountains doesn't really mean anything, but you got pretty good soil. You got about a foot of topsoil or something, right?
Our soils here are really variable, just I think because of the mountains. Over whatever happened way back in the day, we have some low spots that are straight silty loam kind of soil. Okay. Right to a solid brick clay ridge right beside it.
Yeah.
And then some veins of just pure sand as well in okay. some areas, like sand to the point where if you're moldboard plowing, the furrow just fills back in with sand right really? Behind you. Yeah.
You don't source your sand for your bedding on your own land here?
No. Yeah. The sand veins are limited. It's more clay and right. loam, yeah. A lot of clay.
My parents have that piece right by the mountain too, and they didn't plow it at all. Like, they just kind of disked and put corn in or grass in or whatever.
Okay.
And then they plowed once, and like big logs come up.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Like, all this stuff from when the river used to flood this place, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy. But you have six robots?
Four.
Four Lely's, right?
Yep.
And then one is strictly Jerseys?
Yep.
And then the other ones are a combination, right?
So the one is straight Jersey, and then we have two that are together in a pen, and that's our mature Holsteins.
Right.
And then the fourth one is first lactation Holsteins, and now we've just started putting some Jersey in it just because of space constraints. That right. Jersey robot was getting too full, so.
Okay. And they're all A3s or
A4s? The three oldest ones are A4s, and the new one's an A5. So it's about a year. We've had it for about a year.
That's in the Jersey barn?
No, that's right in the first lactation Holsteins okay. here. We strategically did that because the A5s are supposed to attach new, or like that first time attachment is supposed to be better on them.
Right, with that camera instead of the laser, right?
No, they're still using a laser, but it's a higher frequency, or it has just higher better. Computing power or something, or I don't know, the science behind it, but it is light years ahead of the A4 for attaching
yeah? right?
new cows. It is amazing. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I was just watching my dad's A3s this morning, and like, I don't have a robot at home, so you're probably used to watching a robot not attach, and just like, you know, that feeling of frustration, like, oh, I could have done it in the parlor in 2 seconds, right?
Yeah, it's too familiar, yeah.
But, you know, his numbers are still really good, you know, because he has, three milkings a day or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But just to watch a cow not attach, you just get frustrated as a parlor guy, right?
Don't watch. Yeah. Just walk away.
Yeah. Is that what, that's what you do? You have to train yourself just, you know,
that's the thing. At the end of the day, the numbers are where they
that's
need
right,
to be.
Yeah.
Whereas that A5, you can watch it and it just blows your mind standing there watching it.
Yeah. But you're used to the A4.
Right. And I think the 4s and the 3s were very similar. So what I'm seeing on those is probably what your dad's seeing too.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. But I'm interested in the numbers you see between your Jerseys on the robot and your Holsteins on the robot. Because everything else is the same. You don't see that very often in like any sort of study. You know, studies are done, but they're on different farms. Oh, this farm,
right.
you know, has Jerseys and they have a robot. But they do something a little bit different. This is kind of the only farm where there's no other variables, right? Like your feed is the same. Everything else is the same. So
everything's
like,
the same.
Do you see more visits or like, what do you see with the...
So, as far as the robots are concerned, they definitely visit more aggressively. Our refusals. The Jerseys do, sorry, mm-hmm. yeah. Our refusals are about double as the Holstein. So how many times they go in and not like more than they need to, kind of thing.
Right. And then is rumination down on the Jerseys then? Because they're always like up and trying that robot or?
No, it's about the same. Rumination's about the same.
Same amount of pellet fed in the robots?
No, they get quite a bit less. I believe the Holsteins are at about 5 kilos, and the Jerseys are at 3.
Huh.
So
just the way their ration is balanced.
Yeah, yeah, more or less. And just because of that vigor that they milk with, that they visit with, you're not using that pellet to drive them to the robot as hard.
Okay.
That's part of it too.
So that's something that like nutritionists say to do or not to do. That's kind of like a debatable issue, right? To drive visits with pellet or
right.
What's your opinion? Is that something that you guys do?
I think
do,
it's, it's a balance. You definitely have to drive them with that energy balance, like keep them a little short of energy in the PMR and drive them to the robot for the rest of their energy.
Huh.
But at the same time, that pellet does need to be good quality and it needs to taste good.
Huh.
We've tried a few things over the years from steamrolled barley sprayed with molasses to
in the robot.
Yeah. And that it just 70% of the cows were happy with it, but the other ones wanted nothing to do with it. So it just caused more trouble than it was worth for the little bit of money that you save.
So because the big part is that robot pellet is pretty expensive, right?
Yeah. It does have a lot of goodies in it, like all your energy and if you're gonna have beet pulp, they'll put it in that pellet because it tastes good and
So yeah. What's your what does your ration look like? The stuff we looked at with the jerseys had it had a pound of straw or something.
Yeah, so it's mostly homegrown forages. Well, from the forage end of it, anyways. Corn silage. The Holsteins are getting 60 pounds of corn silage and about 40 pounds, 30 pounds of our cover crop, like our winter crop, which is a winter wheat ryegrass blend.
Oh, wow.
And then a pound of straw. That's it. No alfalfa or nothing like that.
And then how many kgs of concentrate?
Oh, everything's in pounds here. There is, I believe,
or pounds, whatever.
Oh, I couldn't even tell you off the top of my head.
So there's
my brother does the feeding, so I'm not up to date on that.
Oh yeah. So there's corn silage, grass silage, and then your grain. That's your Oh, and then the straw. A little bit of straw.
Just a pound. We'll go anywhere from a half pound to a pound and a half of straw, just depending on the digestibility of the forages that we have in there.
Right. Yeah, if it's too fast and you got to slow it down, is that the idea? Okay.
Yeah, so right now we're feeding some cover crop, like our winter crop that we took a bit early just to get some corn in early. So the digestibility on it is really good.
Hmm.
So we've got, I think, actually a bit over a pound in there right now just to slow it down a bit. But
that's a good problem to have, I guess, hey? Like,
and it's because it's something you can control. Like, you can put the straw in as needed. As opposed to your forage being kind of stuck with what you've got, you can kind of play with it a bit.
Right.
Yeah, really dial it in.
Because, that's where you want to be, is to have forages that are so digestible and so good that you got to add, you know, cheaper of something else, you know?
That's right.
And so, and you're on a family farm, your dad and your brother work with you?
Yeah, so it's in the barn here. It's me and my dad. Mostly, I do all the herd management end of it, the breeding, everything to kind of make sure we're shipping the amount of quota we need to be shipping. And then my brother does the feeding and kind of manages our field work end of things, just crop planning and.
And then he does the custom side of things too.
And then he has a custom forage harvesting outfit here as well. So and then he's got 3 full-time mechanics in the shop here.
On the yard here?
Yeah, on the yard here. So they take in outside repair work as well.
Oh, I see.
Mostly, all farm equipment and tractors, and they do a lot of, like, the forage harvesting thing is definitely where their interest lies, so they take in a lot of other forage harvesters just for their winter and summertime maintenances and stuff
I see.
Like that.
Yeah.
There's quite a bit of farmers around us here that have pole type, like the New Holland pole type harvesters or whatever, so they'll come through as well in the winter and in the summer just before they get rolling with corn, get them spruced up, so
yeah. Still looking for your numbers.
Yeah, I have. So the mature Holsteins get 60 pounds of corn and 50 pounds of the cover crop.
60 pounds of corn and
50 pounds of cover crop silage. They're both fairly wet right now. I think they're both right around 30% dry matter. So.
Huh.
So, yeah, there's that. There's as. And then, so we have a mash like a complete feed, I guess we call it here, for their concentrate, they get 13 pounds of that as well.
13 pounds?
13 pounds.
Oh, and then they get some in the robot too?
The rest is in the robot,
yeah. Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. So a little... what's the total concentrate, like 25 pounds or something? Or
The mature Olsteins, I believe, are right around 28.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. Because they're milking hard, so...
And then you got sand bedding, so how does that all work? I seen your the sand lane, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So we switched from deep-bedded shavings, like nice kiln-dried shavings that there used to be an ample supply of in the valley here.
Right.
And it's too easy. You dump it in and it gets pumped out to your lagoon and off you go. But we were just really taking a bath in the summer, just from mastitis mostly was our biggest issue. We were losing... Looking back, it was probably 15% of our herd every summer.
Really?
To mastitis. Yeah. Well, a combination of the splits from the dry floors and mastitis. Those were our two big things. In the summer, right when you're trying to get ready to fill incentive days and all that, it was very frustrating. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the bad mastitis too, the coliforms and coliforms I actually had a handle on, but the Klebsiella, that was that's a bad one. And I think with the robots, you wouldn't find them until you're like, oh, that's weird, that cow didn't go milk, and you'd find her in a stall, and it's too late at that point.
Yeah, especially with that type of mastitis.
Yeah, by the time you find them, they're pretty much septic already, like it's in their blood. And So the switch to sand... solved both of those problems for us. The slippery floors, especially we've got some pretty aggressive ventilation here, so it really dries the floors off.
Right.
Yeah. So having that sand on the floor has been huge. That actually surprised me that it benefited us that much. I didn't notice it that much.
Right. Yeah. And any effect on the hooves? Like wear them down faster? Or?
Not really. In the first 6 months, I would say I probably noticed a few. Thin soles.
Okay.
But now it's just something to watch in the feed, like whatever you can do in your feed to avoid having soft feet. That we watch that pretty
like
close.
The acidosis type things. Yeah. You're saying? Okay. Yeah. But then your sand gets goes into this flume here.
Yeah.
And then that pump pumps it into kind of a holding tank, or the flume goes into a holding tank.
Yeah.
And then how many times a day does it get pumped over that sand lane?
So our holding tank is incredibly small because we can't dig very deep here. Just we got that groundwater pressure coming in. I think our pit's only 7 feet deep.
Okay.
So it's a really small tank. So every time the alley scraper dumps, that reception pit gets emptied.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it goes over the sand lane.
Right.
So it's like every 45 minutes to an hour, there's something going over the sand lane.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that better, more times over the sand lane with less product type of thing?
Apparently,
I mean, you can build
it
a smaller sand lane, but
yeah, it just because every time you pump, there's like a little layer of manure that stays on top of the sand. So rather than that sitting there and drying, once it doesn't get a chance to sit there, it gets blown off every so often. So,
and how many times do you empty the sand lane then?
Twice a week.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Is there like
a
foot in there?
I try to do Mondays and Thursdays, but sometimes it gets pushed around. But and yeah, doing that, there will be 10 to 12 inches on it. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, so that's been a real game changer for us to switch to sand. It pretty much solved the mastitis cases. I think I've had one coliform since we switched. No more Klebsiellas. We'll get the pretty minor cases occasionally still, but they're pretty easily treated with the intermammary stuff. Those nasty ones that cost you cows have seemed to have been dealt with.
Huh. So. What is your some of your numbers, like your cull rate and stuff?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
And you guys started with a double four, you were saying?
Yes.
That was how many years ago?
Oh, we've been with in robots now it'll be 9 years this fall. So we had a double four before that.
When did your dad start here?
in the early 80s on this farm.
Okay.
Yeah. And he had started, I think, like a half a dozen years before that, roughly on another rented farm out in Rosedale.
Okay.
So, yeah. And that, yeah, he'd been milking in that double four ever since then.
Wow.
So it was well used. And then we were pushing it three times a day just before, probably the last 2 years before we switched to robots, just to try build up so we could start buying more quota and build up a bit more quota holdings before we made the transition. But
Yeah. Crazy. So you got your, you guys, your incentive days got taken away too, right? For October and September.
Yeah, just yesterday.
October and November.
Before those ones got taken away as well. They were under review prior to that, but.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That was tough. Crazy. That was tough. We were all set up to ship all of that. And
are you involved at all with the local industry or?
I'm on a local producer board.
Okay.
Mainland Milk Producers.
Okay.
So it's a, it's a producer board. We kind of critique and provide input, I guess, to the to the marketing board and the CDA.
So. Okay. So in Alberta we have regions, so we don't often get together all as producers or whatever. We'll all have like regional meetings. So I think that's similar to what like Fraser Valley. What did you say it was?
Mainland. Mainland milk producers, and then there's Island. Yeah, we have four regions in BC as
Oh, I see. So that's what you call your region, basically.
Yeah.
Huh. And how's that been?
Yeah, it's been good. I was on Mainland Young Milk Producers before that, so they it's a group sponsored, I guess, by Mainland Milk Producers to get young people kind of interested in in it. So we did that, and they sent me to Ottawa for the lobby day a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
So I did that 2 years in a row. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. I definitely realize the politics end of it is not my cup of tea.
Oh, yeah? So, why not?
So, I don't know. It's just...
You like the cows better type of thing?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but... So... But it's been good. I've learned a lot. Kind of how the whole... I don't know exactly how the whole system works behind the scenes, but it's definitely been good to learn all that.
Yeah, very interesting, yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially with the pricing stuff, and I enjoy that stuff, like...
Yeah, because it can be very complicated, and until you start asking questions, and
I don't know
what you've seen when you started, but you start sitting in on these meetings, and you have like no idea what they're talking about, and just the terminology, and you got to start asking questions, and
it can be a rabbit hole, right?
Yeah, but no, it's been good.
So how is the last heat the whole heat thing been
the
on the
heat
herd.
Dome?
What's a heat dome?
I don't know.
That's what do people call
that? That's what
that?
They called it.
Oh, just because it starts getting warmer and then it goes down, or?
I assumed it was a dome that kind of moved. I pictured
like a meteorological term. Okay.
I don't know why they called it that.
But anyways, it was 45 degrees.
It was 45 degrees either way, regardless of what it was called. It was tough. It was tough. Our intakes dropped about probably 50% for a few days there.
Right.
And we're pretty well ventilated here. All our barns are tunnel ventilated. We got soakers for the cows. And yeah, it was tough. I think our Holsteins went from 43 liters roughly down to 35 for a few days.
Huh.
And they're back to 42 now or something. So it's they're pretty much back, I would say. The ones that are gonna get back to where they were are back.
So how do you what do you attribute that high milk production to? I mean that's a pretty good number, 42 liters.
Forages and keeping the days in milk in check, I would probably say
are
the two biggest things.
And you guys carry a pretty strong preg rate or
we're in that 30% range.
Oh,
the
wow.
Jerseys are up over that.
Is that right?
All the time, yeah.
Really? Huh. Yeah. And what's their average time serviced?
right now it's 2.1. We probably average around 2 on the year, I would say.
Okay.
We'll drop down to 1.8 kind of things at the easier time of the year. But And that's all sex semen into the jerseys as well.
Okay. So, like you were saying, aside from the obvious bad ones, or whatever. And then you guys have a ranch up by Kamloops that you send all your young stock to?
Yeah. So we're a partner on a heifer raising outfit up there. Us and 3 other farms.
More and more people are doing that in Merritt or the interior.
Merritt land got a bit expensive for us. Okay. And the availability's hit and miss. You really got to be sitting there ready to go when you hear a place come up, and then it's because it's gone immediately, pretty much. So that's why we went a bit further. Yeah, we're probably another hour and 15 minutes past Merritt, I guess.
Right.
Up by us anyways. We're a little north of Kamloops, so.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's us and 3 other farms partnered on that, and then we take in some custom raising as well.
Okay.
So there's, in total, we have around 1,200 head or so.
Okay. Up there. Yeah. So. And then, so if a farmer in the Fraser Valley wants to put cows there, you can?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Doesn't have to be the Fraser Valley either. Whatever.
Right.
Whatever's economical to get them there, I guess.
Right. Yeah. So what do you guys feed them there? Like alfalfa silage or?
So we grow grass, alfalfa mix silage on the farm there.
Right.
And then we bring in some hay and some GSPs and some straw. And depending on the group is what it gets. The young groups get a good shot of hay. Their ration's probably half hay and a good shot of energy. Huh. And then that a little bit of that silage. And then all the way up to the furthest pregnant ones, they'll get mainly that silage and straw and some GSPs kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
The GSPs are from the port here?
Yeah.
What are GSPs again?
It's short for grain screening pellet. So.
Oh, from the mills then?
Yeah. Well, it does. They mostly come out of the port. I don't know exactly what's in them, but it essentially is the sweepings, I think, out of the mill. So, and then they pelletize it, I think, just to make handling a little nicer so it's not so dusty.
Right. Yeah.
So it's got a bit of protein, a little bit of protein, a little bit of energy, but lots of dry matter.
You have a crazy... 42 is your average here?
Yeah, the year-long average, I would say, is 42. And
that's insane.
The easy times a year will in that 44, 45 kind of range. But, yeah, the heat at this time of year starts taking its effect a little bit. But
yeah.
And the jerseys are down or around 30, 29 to 30 kilos. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they're still at 1.8 then, right? They're still, or they have higher butter fat, or?
They do have higher butter fat. So as far as butter fat kilos a day, the Holsteins are, 1.8 roughly, and the Jersey be 1.6 kind of thing.
So what are your goals? Like, those are my goals. What are your goals?
Not more is always better, right? Right now, it's a bit of a, it's tough. People ask that. It's tough to, it's because we're working on switching over to Jersey is the long-term goal. So,
and not for room either. You guys got lots of room. It's not like you have a huge, huge herd that you're lacking stall space.
Right.
You see it in the efficiency on an animal level.
100%. Huh. Yeah. So there's a bunch of factors. Efficiency. The money savings in the jerseys is in the concentrate. So, and where we are here, we buy all of our concentrate. There's no, like, it all gets trucked in. So, that would probably be the biggest factor. The other thing is land price here. We are not in a position to pay the going rate for land in the valley here. Right. So, it becomes a question of what can we do on our existing land base. And I feel Jersey we can ship more quota off of this place long-term.
With less feed type thing, less forages? That's is that what right. you're thinking? Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
And how many acres do you guys farm?
We farm 160 and we own 100 of it.
Okay.
So, So,
and mostly corn and
Mostly corn, this year, we've got 120 acres of corn and 30 acres of grass.
Okay.
The grass mainly gets made into round bales for dry cows.
Okay.
That's pretty much it. And then all the grass that's in our milk cow rations is just first cut grass and the cover crop. That's all we'll feed to the milk cows.
Why is that?
Just the quality of it is just
And the other superior. Stuff you sell?
No, it's all, so the later cuts are all round bales for the dry cows.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And the first cut is the only one you'll feed to the milk cows?
First cut and the cover crop, yeah.
Oh, interesting. There's just the digestibility
The digestibility on the first cut grass is a little lower than the cover crop, but it's still unreal feed. And it also, I think a factor of it is you get the... we get three big bunkers of it. So you roll into a bunker of first cut and it's that same feed for like 4 months or five months, as opposed to if we did grass, you're getting into a new cut of grass every 30 days or whatever.
Yeah, and
so suddenly your ration's getting upset every So now we run in, you can get into a big bunker of corn and you're in the same corn for 8-9 months and you're in the same grass for 4 or 5 months and you just, there's enough not very many interruptions in like ration changes and stuff.
So yeah.
I think that's all huge. Yeah, it's all those little things you're asking about production numbers and whatever. We don't really push it, but you just look at those kind of things and I think it just kind of comes the less interruptions you can have and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so yeah, those are the two forages and straw is the other forage in there and straws kind of straw, so it doesn't change much either.
Right. Yeah.
So,
what do you think about the future of the industry? What's going to change in the next 10 years?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I'd like processing to change. Obviously, that's
On our side of the country here for sure. We need some processing. I'd like to see some innovation in processing, I think.
Okay.
New products, I think, is pretty key. I might be a bit unique in this, but I look across the line to see what they're doing. I think if you have any questions, whether it's at farm level or industry level, I think those guys down there know how to make money dairying because they don't have a choice.
Because their margins are slimmer?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I think, like, if you look at that plant in Ontario, the name of that Fairlife, the Fairlife.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. That came up from down there, right? So, just as far as product innovation goes, technically that got developed down there and then came up here. I'd like to see that change, I think. And that's, we talk about processing capacity too. I think that's where that's going to come from. Finding some new products to create.
I've heard that more often with like that idea that we really need to look to the bigger farms in the U.S. to see where we can save money on our, our dairies are a lot smaller, but some of the stuff you learn, just translates right across. Yeah. So,
that farm we bought our jerseys from, I like to, when those guys talk, I listen because they know how to make money down there, I think.
Yeah, some of them are super commercial, which is awesome. But like, I don't know if it works as far as marketing and stuff like that. Like, how do you feel that's gonna go if guys start going more commercial and saying, this is how we do this and we're gonna go up to 5,000 cows. And
I have the same concern as you on that. I think. I don't know. A lot of our marketing has the small farm with the cows out in the pasture out in front of it still, and I don't know if that's the case on the majority of farms these days.
Do we wait for the consumer to change on that, or do we push ahead with stuff before the consumer knows what it is?
I don't know. You got to be honest, though, I think.
Right.
The big commercial farm's not always a bad thing, I don't think. You get this factory farm stigma, if you will, but it's not all bad. A lot of those guys have their own vets on staff, and they've got stuff dialed mm-hmm. in
yeah.
real tight, as opposed to some small farms, maybe everything's not so dialed in and they struggle with some more areas.
But, right. Yeah.
So in that question, on which farm is animal welfare better? The small one, just because it's small, or the big one that's literally got a vet looking at them every day? Or
yeah, right. Yeah. And more technology and
yeah.
stuff watching yeah. out for him.
So yeah, I don't know what the future brings. I think we're doing really good with milk quality stuff. There's very good things happening there.
Absolutely,
and,
yeah.
It's a fantastic product, and
yeah.
I think we got to do good with educating the consumer.
Hmm.
If I think we had to work on anything, that's probably it.
Mm-hmm. Is it worth the money right now?
I would say regular advertising probably isn't, but I think we need to shift over into more of an educational.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Because someone's going to educate them yeah. about it, and it's a matter of who. And at this point, I think it's the wrong who right now is who's
interesting.
Who's educating. Yeah.
Interesting, yeah. yeah. Sometimes when you say, like, oh, we need to educate them, it sounds like real, like, look down your nose at people, you know?
Right. Yeah, but, and no, I hear that, and so you got to be careful how you word it, I guess, but
yeah.
you look at the way it used to be, everyone had a grandpa or an uncle or someone who had yeah. a farm still, and
yeah.
and that is definitely not the case anymore, so there's yeah. no tie back to the farm
mm-hmm.
for the most of our consumers anymore, and I think that's pretty important
mm-hmm.
to, because it seems like the anti-animal agriculture people are doing more educating than we are right now.
Yeah.
So, something that's really been bugging me lately is more the environmental-based stuff, with these carbon taxes and that kind of stuff. I feel, I haven't done the science behind it, but I feel dairy's probably about as close to a carbon neutral industry as it can get.
Yeah.
And I just feel like we need to get that message out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just with cow farts and all this stuff you hear about these yeah. days, but there's never any chatter about the carbon sequestration of the crops that we grow, right?
Yeah.
You never hear that end of it. So
are you done your environmental farm plan?
We're just finishing it up here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just started it the other day, too. I think it's part of our pro action for September or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, it checks what you're doing on your farm for, you know, environmental stuff. But a lot of stuff, I'm like, okay, we do mm-hmm. all this stuff. Exactly. Like, why is it even asking? Like, we do all this environmental stuff that they're preaching. Like, we've done that for years.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and people don't realize that, I guess, when they're saying, oh, cow farts, right? It's ruining the planet. But, yeah, so.
Yeah.
Can be frustrating, that sure end can. Of things.
Yeah. Yeah, and you see this wrong, the messages come out of the media or whatever that you know aren't real accurate, and
yeah.
it's definitely frustrating.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Really appreciate the walk through the barn. Showing me your nice cows.
It's always good to walk through the barn and see something new, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I learned lots, for sure.
Good.
Well, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yep.
Right on.
Take care.
We'll see you.
Thank you for listening to the Faraway Farm Boy podcast, episode number 44 with Aaron Niels. This podcast has been made possible by Chinook Dairy Service. Did you know that Chinook Dairy Service can fine-tune and optimize the performance of all brands of milking equipment? Call Chinook for a free milking system evaluation today. Join me again next time on the Faraway Farm Boy podcast.